From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Cincinnati, Ohio last week at a rally for Donald Trump. The presidential candidate told his supporters that the election was rigged against him and he needed their help to make sure that a fair outcome was achieved. Trump made it clear either he was going to win or the result was rigged and illegitimate. One of his supporters, 61-year-old Steve Webb, talked to reporters after the rally. What was Steve going to do to heed Donald Trump's call for fair elections? Here's what he told the Boston Globe, quote, "I'll look for, well, on election day, it's called racial profiling. Mexicans, Syrians, people who can't speak American. I'm going to go right up behind them. I'll do everything legally. I want to see if they are accountable. I'm not going to do anything illegal. I'm going to make them a little bit nervous," end quote. And this is where we are, 3 weeks until election day. Supporters planning to intimidate non-white voters at polling stations. I confess that I was shocked at Mr. Webb's comment, but he's not alone. One Trump supporter on Twitter told us that there are no such thing as safe spaces in the real world, not even polling stations. And I wondered, what's going on here? Our elections are not rigged. The bedrock of our republic is trusting the elections process. They're not perfect. But we have some remarkable people who make sure that they are fair. And we've got wonderful people not only working professionally, but as volunteers to make sure we can be confident that our votes count. Well, Mr. Trump has not backed down. Just last night, he spent a big portion of his rally on the claim that either he will win or the election cannot be trusted. This hour, let's have a conversation about what it means to rig elections and why we should not be worried that this process is rigged. Let me welcome our guests in studio. Tom Ferraci and David Van Varick are here. They are Monroe County Board of Elections Commissioners. One Democrat, one Republican, and of course, nice to see you both here. Tom, nice to see you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
To be clear, this is not a partisan discussion. This is just about understanding what the process is and why I think it's important to stress 3 weeks from the election that we're not in a rigged system here. But before we dive into that, Randy Gorbin's here, WXXI News Director. Hi, Randy.
How are you?
Very good.
Good. What a great week to be talking about the elections and support for public radio, because I think the two, Evan, go hand in hand. This is the kind of discussion that we're trying to foster here on WXXI. And we also are putting a lot of resources, not just the Connections talk show, but we are planning, as we have been for our county clerk debate on Monday, which you'll see on TV and listen to on radio and online. And, of course, election night, November 8th, we've got a lot of folks who are going to be out in the field as well as here in the studio with Evan. And all of that, again, it costs resources. There's crew, there's staff. So we're looking for your support this week to help us with our semi-annual membership drive here. You can make a donation right now at 454-6300, 454-6300, out of town 1-800-295-9994, that's 1-800-295-9994, or you can just do it very easily with the WXXI app or online at WXXI.org. If you're going to participate in the election process and you like the coverage we bring you, please help us do that by making your donation now.
All right, thank you very much, Randy. Okay. We'll check in with you later this hour. First, let's listen to what, for example, what Donald Trump has been saying. And this is just one of the many examples. In this case, he's telling Sean Hannity on Fox News that, again, he better win on November 8th. Let's listen.
Well, I think they are the news media. This is not about election officials.
Sorry, that's Newt Gingrich. Let's go back. Let's get Donald Trump. This is a short one, Rob. This is one that's only 8 seconds long. Let's listen.
And I'm telling you, November 8th, we better be careful because that election's going to be rigged. And I hope the Republicans are watching closely or it's going to be taken away from us.
Okay, so he's saying it's going to be taken away from us. Now, he has continued on this theme for many days and at length, and some of his surrogates kind of picked up the thread on the Sunday show. So now let's listen to what Newt Gingrich was telling Martha Raddatz of ABC News at length this weekend. What does it mean when we talk about rigging?
Well, I think they are the news media. This is not about election officials at the precinct level. This is about last Friday when the networks spent 23 minutes on the Trump tape and less than 1 minute, all three networks combined, less than 1 minute on Hillary Clinton's secret speeches that were being revealed in WikiLeaks. And you look at that and you say, I mean, I think it's amazing that Trump is as close as he is right now, considering the one-sidedness of the news media barrage. And the best description of it is by Barry Castleman in his blog, where he said, this is a coup d'etat. He said, 14 million citizens in private ballots picked Donald Trump. 20 TV executives have decided to destroy him.
But you say it's not at the precinct level, but Trump has also told people to monitor polling stations.
They should. You look at Philadelphia, you look at St. Louis, you look at Chicago. I mean, again, I'm old enough. I remember when Richard Nixon had the election stolen in 1960, and no serious historian doubts that Illinois and Texas were stolen. So to suggest that we have, that you don't have theft in Philadelphia is to deny reality.
Let me work backwards there. Well, actually, you guys can start wherever you want. Dave, what do you make of what you just heard there?
I think it's just shows what an unusual election we're going through, process and the opinions there. I just know that I'm very confident in what's going on here in Monroe County and in the state of New York as far as election security.
When it comes to Mr. Gingrich saying, well, they should go out and monitor polling stations, that Donald Trump's right, that he should send his supporters out there to police it, that implies that polling stations are not secure in some way. And David, that's not fair, is it?
No, I would not agree with that.
Okay. Tom, when you hear him use the word coup d'etat, does that raise alarm bells for you?
The problem with this in terms of representing this is the fact is that we actually, the whole process of what happens in the polling place starts when the voter first registers and what we go through to verify that registration to make sure that, in fact, that person is who they are, they live where they say they do, and we go through several steps to do that. Also, too, in the process, we make sure, particularly here in New York, where we have a bipartisan system, that, you know, if a Democrat puts a registration in the system, a Republican has to check it, or vice versa. And so all of that kind of stuff, we stay after, we stay on top of very, very, very closely. The files are really well protected here. And by the time they get to the poll book, we know exactly what numbers are going in the poll book. We tie back those numbers. We know what should go out there. We know what goes out there. And so when the poll books go to the polling place, you can be pretty assured that the people in those books have been vetted several times. In the polling place itself, the inspectors check the signature against the person coming in. They come in, they cover up the signature, have the voter sign. Actually, it starts even before that, because when you go into the polling place, they'll ask your name and then they'll ask your address. They're verifying, again, where you live and trying to get that information. And so this whole concept of the people that are voting, are somehow they're fraudulent voters, I really find hard knowing what I know about how the steps we go through, I find it hard to accept.
The quote that I read from the Boston Globe at the top of the hour has raised a lot of concerns among people of all backgrounds. Just the idea that you could say that you're going to go racial profile at polling stations and sneak up behind non-white people and make them feel nervous. And this person, who's a 61-year-old voter in Ohio, told the Boston Globe, I'm going to do that. That's what Mr. Trump wants. But I don't think that's illegal. Is that legal to do that, Tom?
It's not legal to disrupt the polling site activities. You know, we do have laws in the book that allow you to challenge a voter, but you have to have a legitimate reason for doing that. And to be honest with you, I do see this in particular, I see this as a voter suppression tactic to scare people away from the polling places, and hopefully they won't bite. They won't stay away from the polling places because of that. It's to target a specific audience like that is just so unbelievable.
If you're a Democrat supporting Hillary Clinton, you can't show up and make any voter who may be wearing a Trump shirt feel uncomfortable. Dave, does that rhetoric about, you know, I'm going to show up, I'm going to do my part in making certain people feel a certain way, does that rise to the level of illegality? I think a lot of people have wondered, you know, what happens in Monroe County if somebody showed up and did that?
Well, there's clear laws against electioneering and advocating for a candidate or an issue within 100 feet of the entrance of a polling site or in the polling site. So certainly, it depending on the behavior, it could border on or cross the line into being improper electioneering. So hopefully that won't occur, but our inspectors and the site chairs would be prepared to deal with that if something such as that occurred.
Well, speaking of inspectors, you heard Newt Gingrich invoke the city of Philadelphia. Trump and Hannity have been saying that Philadelphia proves that the vote really was already rigged against Republicans because there were several dozen precincts in 2012 in which zero people voted for Mitt Romney. Well, one of the elections inspectors there is Ryan Godfrey. He took to Twitter to explain exactly why that allegation is wrong. Godfrey explained that there are dozens of rural, mostly white precincts in our country that cast zero votes for Barack Obama, but no one raised that point. And his rebuttal was picked up by national newspapers, so I asked him to join us on Connections to briefly lay out his experience making sure elections in Philadelphia and hopefully across the country are fair and just.
I'm super interested in elections and voting and just really feel like this is a way that I could give back to my community and to my country. And at the same time, in software, I'm a product manager and kind of love the data aspect of this and, you know, looking at the numbers and charts and graphs and all that stuff. So it's patriotism plus data nerd really made this an ideal job for me to do, you know, twice a year.
Of course, you had no idea that you would end up sort of grappling with some national figures like Sean Hannity. So let's kind of go back to that. It was it was a couple of months ago now that Sean Hannity came out and said, we have every right to fear that this is going to be a rigged election. It's always against Republicans. You know, look at Mitt Romney. He said there were 59 precincts in the Philadelphia area where he got zero votes. And he essentially said, Hannity said, there's no way any candidate could get zero votes. It makes no sense. And therefore, Right. There's your evidence that it's already been rigged. And you responded to that. So let's kind of go through your response. What did you think when you saw that? I think I read that, first of all, you said that you were even personally insulted.
Yeah, I was personally insulted because, you know, there's several thousand of us in the city of Philadelphia who have signed up for this job to help our city and to help our country. And there's the accusations that there's something untoward or something illegal happening here in our elections, not just, you know, maybe once in a while, but routinely, that personally offended me. And I got pretty upset and kind of dashed off a bunch of tweets on the subject.
How quickly did those tweets get picked up? What did you experience with that?
It happened fairly quickly, I guess. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I wrote them in 20 minutes and then went to downstairs to help with dinner. And then suddenly my phone was beeping and buzzing, and it got a little bit crazy.
We're not going to get deep into the weeds here, but one of the key points was that, yes, it's entirely plausible that some presidential candidates in certain parts of the country could get zero votes in a precinct. In fact, John McCain, Mitt Romney, when they were the nominees, their opponent, Barack Obama, got zero votes in very conservative parts in certain precincts. Why don't you just explain to voters, to listeners who may think, well, maybe Hannity's got a point. I mean, how do you get zero votes in a precinct?
Sure. Well, we have basically, you know, our city of Philadelphia, Mitt Romney got almost 100,000 votes across the whole city, first of all. They just don't happen to be very evenly distributed, basically due to the demographics of the city, because we have African American and citizens in that kind of congregate together. It's a fairly segregated city in a lot of ways, unfortunately, still. So in those parts of the city where it's largely black and often in a lower economic class, it's not that surprising that, number one, there are very few registered Republicans at all. And, you know, number two, that they would be legitimately excited about voting for the first, you know, black president. And if you look at the primaries of the same year in 2012, a lot of these divisions also had no votes for Republicans then. There just aren't registered Republicans in this part of the city.
Did Sean Hannity respond and say, hey, Ryan, thanks for pointing that out. I learned something. This is helpful to know, and I will stop with this allegation of rigging.
No, he followed me on Twitter, though, so I guess he's waiting to jump in.
Wow.
He hasn't yet.
So that point about the zero votes is just one component of this. Then there's the idea that, you know, we don't have people inspecting and monitoring, that we don't really know. So why don't you explain to listeners what you want them to know from your perspective about how we are protecting this process?
Sure. Well, because our machines in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia specifically are electric touch machines, we don't have a paper trail here. So there is this idea that something could be happening inside the machines to magically switch these votes. But, you know, the machines are kept under lock and key. They're, you know, tested thoroughly every election. And there's a chain of custody. So we know where the machines are at all times. Someone is always responsible for them. One of the most important things, even though these machines don't have any paper verification, they're not networked. They're not hackable in a real sense, because you would have to hack each one individually using specific 90s era technology, essentially. That's a cartridge that you would have to be able to get into the back of this sealed machine and then change out somehow, and then do this over and over again if you wanted to have any real effect on the election. I mean, we're talking roughly 1,000 voters in every division, and maybe, 600 of them are going to vote. If you want to make a big impact on the election, you're going to have to change or hack into an awful lot of voting machines. And it's just an unrealistic prospect when it would be much simpler just to get your team out to vote more effectively. That's something that that Philadelphia Democrats are very good at, getting the vote out, often telling people, handing them a sheet, telling them who the recommended candidates are. And that's, frankly, much simpler and a much easier process for making sure that your team wins an election. And, of course, it's completely legal.
So, Ryan, now that I'll wrap up with this. Now that you've got Donald Trump last night, just last night, after after all of this, still talking about Philadelphia specifically, do you feel like it's almost cartoonish, or are you concerned that when you've got a presidential candidate who, win or lose, he's going to get tens of millions of votes, when he's telling his supporters that this is rigged, that this is not a legitimate election, is there a danger to democracy?
I think so. I'm worried, first of all, just about violence on Election Day. I hope there's no violence. I hope that this doesn't happen. I don't want to say for sure that it will, but I feel like the feeling is in the air that there are people out there that feel they need to do something about this. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means people coming in from the suburbs. In Pennsylvania, you have to be a member of the county that you're in to register as a certified poll watcher, which is certainly something that we would encourage for people in Philadelphia residents, to talk to their party, to talk to the city and get a certificate of poll watching. And then they can go to any poll that they want and look on the process. That would be encouraged. That would be terrific. And, really just ensuring that the election is proceeding smoothly and without any fraud. But if people are going to be intimidating, maybe possibly with weapons, I don't even really want to think about the consequences here. But it's frightening to me, and I'm kind of just sick to my stomach all the time currently.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. Listeners, we're going to put his initial tweet thread that he put out there in order to correct Mr. Hannity. We'll link to that so you can check out what Ryan has had to say. And Ryan, the final message for our listeners, and I know, first of all, we've got Trump supporters listening. We've got people maybe who are still undecided. We've got listeners who will hear friends say, hey, I'm concerned about the legitimacy of the election. What's the short answer when people say, hey, this is rigged?
I'd say the people that are running the elections are very local. They're your neighbors. They're your friends. They, in often cases, have been doing this for 20 to 30 years, and they're patriots. They want this to proceed smoothly and to have all the votes counted accurately, and I'm with them.
That's Ryan Godfrey, an elections inspector in Philadelphia, taking the time to join our program. I appreciate his time, so thanks to him. And again, that tweet stream is now posted, Megan Mack and myself, MMack Media on Twitter, and at Evan Dawson on Twitter. I'll ask our guests in studio, Tom Ferrasi and Dave Van Varick, who are the elections commissioners for Monroe County. Tom, that sounds pretty spot on from what you've heard in terms of his experience. What do you make of what you heard from Ryan?
Exactly. He's talking about the kind of processes that go through in every county to protect the right of the voters. In this county, we have a long history of making sure the votes are counted and counted right. We feel very proud of that, and we've worked very hard to get to there. And whenever we open up a process, we open it up, it becomes very transparent. People can come and look at voting machines being tested. They can come and look at the ballots being counted. And we feel good about how hard we've worked to make sure that transparency comes over to the voters so that they can feel comfortable their votes are counted. I agree with him completely.
Okay. David, thoughts on what you heard?
I would agree with what Tom said, that yes, the security of the ballots and whatnot is supreme concern, and we people do take every step to assure that.
I have an email from a listener named Jane who writes the following. I'm a trained elections inspector. She's local here in our area. She says, I'm a trained election inspector. People can come into the polling places to vote. There will be at least four elections inspectors in the room, and some polling places will have designated watchers who have filed a watcher certificate signed by their local political party, which allows them to stay in the room and record data, usually a list of voter names, as they are called out by the inspectors. No one else is permitted to stay in the room, can't linger or loiter inside the polling place. They will be asked to leave by the inspectors if they did. If they don't leave, inspectors will likely call the authorities, and I suspect the county sheriffs and state police will be readily available on November 8th. Is that accurate?
I think she's spot on. I mean, and that tells you what the inspectors realize, that in fact we'll support them. If there's issues at the polling place, they call us, and we'll take whatever steps we need to rectify a situation at a polling site.
Now, to be fair, I think one of the reasons that you have, I don't want to try to get inside the minds of Steve Webb, who was the supporter I quoted from the Boston Globe talked to, who talked about kind of intimidating voters, but maybe he is concerned. After hearing from Donald Trump and others, that there's a lot of illegitimate voting, that there's a lot of fraud. You know, for example, yesterday, according to the New York Times, Donald Trump at his rally said that, quote, 1.8 million dead people will vote, and they will vote for somebody else, end quote. He says that the Times says that statement was apparently a reference to the fact that a 2012 study found that up to 1.8 million active voter registrations are still in play from deceased voters. But that same study found no evidence of fraud, or that these 1.8 million deceased voters who are still on the rolls are casting ballots somehow. So he's taking the fact that there are deceased voters on rolls, and there's always going to be some deceased voters on rolls. That's impossible not to, right? To say that they're all voting and they're voting for somebody else. Do we have any evidence, David, Tom, any evidence to be concerned that deceased voters are throwing the election one way or another?
There's none at all. I mean, there's no evidence whatsoever. To be honest with you, we deal with deceased voters through the State Department of Health and what have you. And if anything, I feel a little bit embarrassed to suggest that a couple of times we've actually deceased somebody only to discover they're not deceased.
Yeah.
And so if anything, we have had experience, not a lot, a few here and there, but usually with a big election like this, we may actually get a couple of people who we had marked as deceased, and they're not. So, and there's a process for that. They vote an affidavit ballot, they get to vote, what have you. So it's not a lost vote, but it's just the other way around.
Okay,
and,
David?
And for that to happen, somebody would have to show up at the poll and sign the book in the same signature as in our poll book to actually try and vote.
Exactly, yeah. So we're known as the person.
So that would be, I don't see that happening.
Okay. It'd be a great pleasure to find out they're still alive. That would be great. You know, the bottom line is it's a very different scenario than what we presented to voters. Here's the other claim that Trump was making yesterday. He said, quote, we have voters all over the country where they're not even citizens in the country and they're voting. It's happening everywhere. Is there evidence of that?
None. Again, it's a situation where our voter rolls are vetted. They're vetted DMV. They're vetted through their Social Security numbers. I mean, all of these records go through in multiple checks to verify who these people are.
Okay. So I'm just, again, trying to get inside the heads of someone who's saying they're going to intimidate people who look like they're Syrian or Mexican, and maybe they're taking the statements they've heard from this campaign, and then they're saying, I'm also being told that these folks will vote and they shouldn't be allowed to, and I'll make sure they don't. And what we're hearing is we don't have to worry about that. That we've got a very good vetting process already. We've got inspectors at polls. We've got wonderful people, professional and volunteers. And this is an American patriotic duty that people, as Ryan Godfrey said, as someone who is not a Democrat, by the way, Ryan Godfrey, saying that he feels it's his patriotic duty to help make sure this process is happening. And we have so many people to thank for that. So let's get our only break of the hour. And when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. If you have questions about the voting process locally, trying to understand how it works, trying to make sure these votes are counted and protected, it's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're going to hear from Wes Renfro, who is an assistant professor of political science at St. John Fisher College, and want to let you know that the commissioners who are in studio today, Tom Ferrasi and David Van Varick, they are going to be part of a public forum, free to the public, sponsored by the League of Women Voters in the Rochester metro area. And that is 8 days from now. That's next Wednesday night at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church of Rochester. So you have any other questions, these issues continue to bubble, this is your chance to go out, hear from them directly, and they're always generous with their time. So that's 7 p.m. next Wednesday night for that free public forum at the First Unitarian Church of Rochester. We continue in just a moment. Coming up in our second hour, our panel debates Bob Dylan's selection for the Nobel Prize in Literature. Now, his fans, and many fans of popular music, have said this is a great moment for music. It's an admission that popular music can be literature, that it can be great writing. But some opponents say this was a missed opportunity by the committee to honor other writers who don't have the spotlight like Dylan. Let's talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to stress as well that Mike Pence, the presidential candidate, the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party, has said that that Donald Trump and Mike Pence are going to honor the results of this election and that they are going to trust the process. And I think that was heartening to hear. So if you know Trump voters who are concerned, if you're hearing from a candidate that you support, if it's Donald Trump, just know that I think that there are so many good people working. And we've got two in this room. One Democrat, one Republican. We've got our friends and neighbors from around the country. So please continue to spread the word that they're doing such great work for our country. Brief interruption as Randy Gorbin is here, WXXI News Director, during Tuesday. The week's going quickly.
The week is going quickly, and in between these segments, I'm running back to work on elections planning, Evan. And, of course, you will be a part of that.
I'll be there.
I did mention that to you, hopefully.
I plan to be there. Yeah.
Okay, good. It's starting 8 o'clock on Tuesday night, November 8th, and there's a lot of preparation before that. Not only, some of the things that you'll be seeing and hearing on the air, the county clerk debate for Monroe County, which will be on next Monday. We are also working on a series involving not only WXXI, but some of our partners at other public stations around the state with some topics of interest to you as voters that'll be coming up the week before elections, and of course all the people that are involved, both the radio and TV coverage for election night. We need your support. This is one of the drives that we hold pretty seldomly, I think, here at WXXI, but if you could make a donation right now, it would be much appreciated to help us continue this fine work. 454-6300 is the number, 454-6300, or you can use the WXXI app, or of course just go to the website wxxi.org/give.
Thank you very much, Randy Gorbman. Okay. We continue with our discussion on protecting elections and the work that both major parties and Americans of all political stripes do to make sure it's not rigged, that your votes do count. And I've got a pile of your emails that have come in. I promise we're going to get to those. I've got some folks on the line who want to jump into the conversation with questions or comments. We also have Wes Renfro, who's an assistant professor of political science at St. John Fisher College, who's on the line as well. Wes, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon.
When you hear talk about rigging, Wes, I do want to point out, this is as heated and I think troubling as I've ever heard in my own lifetime in a presidential election, but it's not just one party that's ever accused the other. I mean, there's a long tradition in our country of parties accusing the other of rigging the game. Right now, what do you have concerns about the electorate's trust in this election?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know as an empirical matter that people fraudulently voting is phenomenally rare. We're talking something that's like being struck by lightning. There's a really robust body of evidence that suggests that that simply just doesn't happen, and there's good reasons we have multi-layered elections. But when you talk to people, many of them are convinced that their votes are somehow not going to count. I think that's really dangerous. I think that it is at least possible that we will see a significant swath of Trump supporters in particular rejecting the outcome of the election. And I don't think that it's unreasonable to conclude that we will see perhaps sporadic acts of political violence.
Let me read an email that just came in on that very subject, and we'll get Wes's take and our commissioners in studio. This comes from a listener. I don't have a name here, but this listener writes the following. Quote, I think the majority of Republicans believe voter fraud is rampant, and until there is ID, there's an ID requirement, no one I know will believe that there isn't fraud. Having poll watchers just reminds me of the Black Panthers standing with batons watching polling stations in 2008. Wes, I'll start with you on that. You know, as you just mentioned, there are going to be people who cry foul here, and that's what we're hearing from this listener.
You know, so I think a lot of folks have suggested that somehow voter ID laws would remedy the alleged travesty of voter fraud. I want to point out that in many polities, in many states, it's actually quite easy to obtain a driver's license without demonstrating citizenship. And so as a proposed mechanism to a proposed problem, that's actually not a very compelling one. we have such a rich body of evidence. We're talking about sort of perhaps dozens of cases of voter fraud out of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of votes cast in the past 15 or 20 years. But it's very difficult to convince people of that because we have a widespread mistrust of government. And in this particular election, there is a candidate who is proclaiming that the election will be rigged before it's even taken place.
David Van Varick, this listener is saying, no Republicans I know believe that there isn't fraud, and the majority of Republicans believe it is rampant, and that's why we need an ID requirement. What would you say to this listener?
I would say that I do not believe that it is rampant or that it even really exists. From watching the process that we go through every day at the office and our bipartisan staff checking all of these registrations, I believe that that is not the case.
Okay, Tom?
You know what? I have several Republican friends, and they don't believe that there is rampant. I mean, it's not in the discussions that we have. And I do, although I laugh about it, I do have a lot of Republican friends, and they trust the process. They believe in the process. You know, we have good conversations about elections and have for many years. I mean, I've been involved in politics now for 48 years. And never have I seen this kind of activity going on.
Okay. Well, I tend to think from just the basic work I've done as a reporter, I would say to this listener, and again, I don't have their name, but I would just say as the work I've done as a reporter, and it's always interesting to see the people who are working from the commissioners to the staffs to just being a citizen and the people that you meet in polling stations. And when you really dig into this, I believe wholeheartedly that Tom Ferrasi would make sure if there was a one-vote margin in favor of Republicans, that he would protect it with everything that he could to make sure that that one-vote margin for a Republican was protected if it was decisive. And I believe that Dave would feel this exact same way. It is more important, I think, to most of these people, if not all the people in this process, that a single-vote margin is protected, even if it's not for the party they belong to, as opposed to rigging the game because of the damage that rigging does to the confidence of the electorate, to voter turnout. So I believe that, and I think we need to keep stressing that. But let me get back to your phone calls now. This is Mike in Parenton next up. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Evan. My concern is transparency. These paperless voting computers have software in them, and my understanding is the software, we don't really know what it's doing because it's a trade secret. And more than that, it's updated periodically. So not only do we not really know what's going on inside the computer, voting computers, what is going on can be modified. So that's my question to the speakers.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Gentlemen?
You know what? I much prefer to have a paper verifiable ballot. I think it's a much safer situation. But, you know, this goes trends back to when HAVA first came into existence back when it was in 2003. And a bunch of states went out and bought machines. Well, we've learned a lot about that since then. And there was definitely problems, I think, up front with security and maintaining security and how you control it and what have you. But over the years, we've worked real hard to make sure that these things are fixed. I mean, for example, here in New York State, the software that runs our machines actually was given to the State Board of Elections by the vendor. It was tested by two outside vendors, and that software then comes to us from the State Board. It's in escrow. We don't get it from the vendors. The vendors don't get to touch our machines. And that's a very important thing. But we learned that, and I think a lot of other states learn that too. So I can't speak to those situations in particular, but I do know the thinking has changed in terms of how we update these machines, how we maintain the software on them. And this concept of it being an escrow, coming from a sole source that's checked it, it changes the game quite a bit.
Okay. David?
Well, and the process of voting and checking the results of the machine, the paper ballot goes through the scanner, and then it's contained in a blue canvas bag in the machine. And the results go on two disks. One of those disks never, ever goes online. It is secure, and it's there to compare to the other one that we use to report the results. And then we audit those machines by state law. 3% random choice selection of three machines get audited by four-person teams. Each box that's done is a bag is a four-person team, two from each party. They sit there and go through every paper ballot that went through the machine and compare that hand count with the machine discount, and we've never been off one vote.
Okay. Mike, you want to follow up there?
Shape.
Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you.
You want to say again, Mike? Go ahead.
Well, so here in New York, we're in good shape, but what about other places where there aren't paper trails and where the process isn't so transparent?
And that's why I mentioned the fact that the thinking about how software is gotten to the boards of elections, how the software gets to the machine, that thinking has begun to really come into play in a lot of places, because it's the only way that you can secure yourself and isolate yourself from the companies that make these machines and that develop the software initially. So that concept is changing even in those states. I do think a paper ballot is better. I agree with the caller on that. But at least these kind of things are being looked at now and not just taken for granted.
Okay. I'll get back to your phone calls in a second. I got an email from a listener just asking if this kind of rhetoric about a rigged presidential election is unprecedented. I don't know if it's unprecedented. I mean, I'd have to really go back and kind of scrub all the historical records. But here are a couple of comments, and I'll ask Wes Renfro to weigh in on this. Just in the last hour, here's President Obama on the idea that this campaign is going to be rigged. He wrote, he said, quote, "It's unprecedented, and it happens to be based on no facts." And just yesterday, the New York Times weighed in on their view on what needs to be done to make sure people trust it. And what they want to hear is more forceful denunciation when we hear the word rigging. So I'm going to quote the New York Times editorial board just yesterday. Quote, "The Republican Party's top leaders still have the duty to speak out and help save the country from reckless rhetoric. The most frightening example is Mr. Trump's frenzied claim that the presidential election is being rigged against him, a claim he has ramped up as his chances of winning the presidency have gone down. Instead of disavowing this absurdity outright, Republican leaders sit by in silence. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, and Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, are the two most powerful Republicans in the country and should be willing to put the national interest above their own. Both know full well there is no rigging, and yet between them, they have managed one tepid response to Mr. Trump's outrageous accusations. Quote, our democracy relies on confidence in election results, Mr. Ryan's spokeswoman said, and the speaker is fully confident that the states will carry out this election with integrity. This is like standing back while an arsonist pours gasoline all over your house, then expressing confidence that the fire department will get there in time. Wes, what do you think?
So at least in the 20th century, it's unprecedented. If we go into the earlier middle history of the Republic, there may be some similar rhetoric, but within the past 100 or so years, I can't think of a comparable case, up to and including Nixon in 1960, in which there was at least a plausible claim that there may have been some malfeasance, and Nixon elected not to pursue that. But I can't think of anything similar, and I certainly can't think of anything that's preemptive in the way that Trump is purporting this to be.
All right, I want to get back to your phone calls, and let me go to Jane in Rochester. Next up, go ahead, Jane.
Yes, Evan. I hope this doesn't show a bias, but maybe it does. In my opinion, the Republicans have always had these tactics to decrease Democratic voting. And it goes way back, but the ID, and if you have to have an ID in some states, but was that ruled unconstitutional by the court?
I don't know the answer to that offhand.
Okay, well, let me go on. But remember back in 2000 when Ohio and Florida, they had too few polling places, or they decreased their machines, they had broken machines, they had lights out, all of these things in key states like Ohio and Florida. And
well, there's human error, Jane. I mean, well, you can't have a 330 million person country and no mistakes or breakdowns.
In such critical states. And I just say it's a Republican tradition, and I say it because we Democrats, we outnumber Republicans. And our fear is always just getting people to the polls. And it doesn't matter much if registered Republicans all get to the polls. Sometimes they need a little cheating. And they're always looking for a way to decrease the voting count one way or another. It's a tradition. And we Democrats, we have more numbers. And this time there may be many more independents and Republicans joining us. So I think they're running scared. They're just trying to, you know, they think they're going to lose. I think it's very possible. And this is just sort of a preemptive. We've been cheated, you know, poor us. And they're just poor losers. But they're the ones who are in need of fooling with the voting process a lot more than the Dems. Like I said, the Dems, our weakness is we don't
all
get
right,
the
Jane.
Vote out.
Well, listen, first of all, thank you, Jane, for the phone call, as always. And that was the most theatrical I've heard Jane. She's into it. She really believes strongly. So there's Jane, her concern that this is a Republican tradition. I read the email from a listener who's concerned that it's the other way around, that it's a tradition of targeting GOP and conservative voters. So you've got suspicion. Tom Ferraci, as a Democrat, what would you say to Jane as a Democrat saying this is a long Republican tradition to keep people out?
It's interesting because I've dealt with a lot of elections over the years. And I have to be honest with you, particularly in this community, Republicans, we've worked very well with them. The Republicans I've worked with here really want to see the vote come out. You know, voter suppression is an issue, but I think it's an issue where you actually need to look at the circumstances and the conditions there. And I can't do quite the broad brush that she did relative to that. I am certainly sure there are people out there that try to suppress the vote. But I think, you know, for what Donald Trump is saying, and that's the way I'll specifically say it, for what Donald Trump is saying, I can't broad brush all Republicans.
Okay. Is suppression more of a concern to you than fraud?
Oh, absolutely. Voter suppression is much more of a concern. You go back and you look at the situations that are occurring. There are a number of states that have moved very quickly to try and suppress voter turnout. And that's a concern. Absolutely.
Okay. Dan in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, thanks for the conversation.
Sure.
Real quick on the side, while it's important to always consider the source of something, I think we'd do well to be aware of how Trump being the face of a given concern or idea kind of discredits that concern or idea via his reputation for lacking credibility. And this could end up maligning people who share that concern, even if they find Trump to be a shameful character. But regarding the security of the popular vote, it's always a concern. But is it the most important factor regarding the integrity of an election? We remember 2000, Al Gore won the popular vote and lost the election. So if the popular vote is not the primary determining factor of who wins an election, then the accurate counting of that vote, I think, shouldn't be the primary measure of that election's integrity. There's an electoral integrity project from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard in 2014, looked at 49 different indicators to analyze 73 parlamentary and presidential contests in 66 countries. They consulted with 855 elections experts globally to assess various indicators. And one thing they said was that the United States was not in the high integrity category and ranked only 26th out of the 66 countries analyzed, and that the U.S. was hurt by lower rankings in the strength of electoral laws, voter registration processes and voter ID laws, campaign finance, and significantly the redistricting of voters and changing of boundaries for political reasons, which can compromise the meaning of the election. I just wanted to know, what does your panel think about other factors besides the vote count?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the phone call. I think to some degree that's a Wes Renfro question. I mean, Tom and David, their work is the nuts and bolts of making sure the count is accurate. And if you want to ask them how they feel about should we move to the board account, which I say yes. I'm going to say this every week until I'm dead. BORDA, I think we should be moving to the board account. But until we do that, how do you feel about the Electoral College? It's possible to have a popular vote and not the Electoral College vote as we saw in 2000. It could happen again someday. Tom and Dave, that's not really your job, is it? These are good questions, by the way. This is not your job.
And it's a whole other discussion because you're talking about campaign finance reform. You're talking about issues that do affect elections, but that's definitely not kind of something that we're
sure
we would normally talk about. Outside of this environment, maybe. Yes.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Or maybe over a glass of wine. But I take the point. But Wes Renfro, that is in right in your sphere there. You're a professor of political science at St. John Fisher College. And what would you want to say to Dan there?
Yeah, you know, I want to say that the Electoral Integrity Project is fascinating. And I want to be very clear, just so that the listeners know, that it's not suggesting that there is actually a problem with the count of votes. But they do find more systemic issues with how we vote, with our electoral rules. A prime example of that might be, why are we voting on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in the month of November, a day in which many people have to work and it's quite difficult for them to actually make it to the ballot box? That puts us in an unfavorable light in comparison to many other countries. I guess I would say that I'm quite sympathetic to the claims put forward by the Electoral Integrity Project. And I guess I would encourage folks to think of it in the following way. If we were to design a mechanism for electing a president in 2016 from the ground up, would it look like the system that we are currently using? And I think that for the vast majority of people, the answer to that is no. We have this somewhat hodgepodge system that's evolved over a very long period of time. But for a whole variety of reasons, there doesn't seem to be much political will to amend it, although we could.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's get through as many of your calls and comments before the rest of the hour, and we'll move quickly here. Lisa in Pittsford. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, question for college students who are attempting to vote. I have a daughter who's out of state, and she registered online but has not yet. She's checking the lookup through the DMV office, but does not yet seem to be registered. Because she still needs to request an absentee ballot. About how long does that process usually take for the DMV to complete the online registration and get it to the Board of Elections so that an absentee ballot request can be followed through?
I'd encourage her to go ahead and submit her absentee ballot request. Over the 2 days of Friday and Saturday, Sunday, we got probably close to 5,000 registrations through DMV. And so processing them, our staff is working actively. They worked until 9 o'clock last night. They worked until 9 o'clock on Saturday night. They're working very hard, but getting them in the system takes a little bit of time. But go ahead and get that application in right away, and don't worry, we'll catch it up with the voter registration.
Okay, so she doesn't need to wait to receive notification
just
that they've
send
received
it in.
Her.
Yeah, send it in.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Good luck. Thank you. Sarah on Twitter says, I trust the system, but I wonder about purged voter rolls in the Democratic primary between Clinton and Sanders. What happened there? I don't know offhand. I mean, I heard some claims. Tom, anything you want to share?
Voters are not – when we talk about purge, it's interesting, particularly in New York State, because purge is not removing them from the rolls. It's merely marking them. And I believe this is probably the New York City incident that they're talking about. Some people were removed from the rolls incorrectly. They should have filled out an affidavit ballot. That situation could have been corrected afterwards. And that's what affidavit ballots are, the provisional ballot. Our affidavits in New York are provisional ballots. And we always encourage people, no matter what, don't go out of the polling place without completing a provisional ballot. If you strongly believe that's where you live and you believe you should be on the rolls, do that. Unless you want to go get a quarter. That's the other option that people have available, the two options. But don't leave a polling place without voting.
Got an email from a listener named Jack who just wanted to know, and we're down to our last 90 seconds, but let's try to do this quickly. He just wants to know, how do you, once all the votes are counted at one individual polling place, how does it combine with the others and sort of make its way, you know, to join the amoeba of national votes? In other words, he's saying, you can count the votes, but when you send the number, can somebody doctor that number, et cetera?
Yes, somebody can doctor that number, but we have two different streams. Cards from the machines go different ways, and those numbers are all confirmed within a few days of each other. So no matter what happens, Everything is unofficial.
It's unofficial. It's not one person with all the power who gets in a room, counts it up, and then says, rip that piece of paper up. I'm going to send the number I want on.
Okay. And cards go different ways. So.
Okay. But it's a good question.
It's always a great question.
So, Jack, I think that's a very good question. And that's a very fair concern. And thank goodness we've got the system in place to make sure that that's not easily done. Wes, last 30 seconds to you here. What would you say to voters who've been concerned about rigging this election season, Wes?
You know, I guess that I would just really stress that this is something that lots of folks, both people at municipal government, state government, the federal government, and also academics, study extremely carefully. You are more likely to be struck by lightning probably two times in a row than we are to see widespread voter fraud, which would somehow change the course of an election.
Wes, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wes, Assistant Professor of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. And I just want to thank once again Tom Ferrace and David Van Varick for the work that they and the staffs do. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you gentlemen do in making sure we can trust our elections. I know it's not just you guys. I know there's great volunteers. There's so many more. Big nods from David and Tom there. If you have more questions or you feel like you didn't get certain things answered, go out and see them 8 days from now. That's October 26th. That's a Wednesday night, next Wednesday, 7 p.m. The League of Women Voters is putting on a free public forum with them, the elections commissioners, at the First Unitarian Church of Rochester on Winton Road. That is next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Short break and more connections next.